Thank you for tuning into the VF One Show with VF and Vincenzo, the podcast that discusses all things business, marketing, politics, and government within the world of Formula One. If that's your thing, then you found the right place. So without further ado, it's lights out and away we go.
Welcome back to the VF One Show. I'm Vincenzo Landino. My co-host, VF, is sitting so patiently. She's waiting for me. Sorry we didn't get this recorded sooner, but we are ready. Good to go. We're here to talk about all things in the F1 world this week. Actually, some really interesting stuff that happened and is happening. Developments. We have a little bit to talk about the FIA and Spa safety concerns. We'll talk about F1 Academy, which I'm excited that there's something positive to talk about, and also 2026 engine. Regulations that have been discussed. We've gotten some more info about that we actually can discuss and talk about real things, not speculation. VF, what are you feeling about? Let's ask you how you're feeling about F1 after Spa this past weekend.
I mean, Red Bull broke another trophy. So I have this theory that maybe. They say that three times a charm or third times a charm, however it goes. So maybe if they break another trophy, their winning streak will end.
Yeah. I'm not sure it works that way.
I highly doubt that's going to happen. Yeah. But I mean, the thought has crossed my mind. So I
know. I would love for it to work that way.
Yeah. Spa was a very predictable race. I think the sprint race, interesting for a couple of reasons, but I think what it shows continually that the FIA doesn't really have a mode or method on how they actually give penalties. I think it's just however they feel like at the time. And that's that. But yeah, it sucks what happened to Piastri. I think that obviously, I think when any driver picks a team, you're kind of wondering, is this the best choice for you? And he finessed Alpine last year, which unfortunately I think is how we're going to remember Otmar. But he's doing really well right now at McLaren. And to be fair, to McLaren's point, they're actually pushing the upgrades that actually support their drivers. And it shows they have a lot of symbiosis right now within the team. So obviously, him going out on the first lap at Spa was not ideal, but he showed a lot of promise in the past couple of races. So I'm excited for him. That was an exciting kind of, highlight, I think, from the sprint race. But other than that, again, very predictable race. I think that Spa had some pretty good calls when it comes to the safety. Of course, I think they had to. We're less than a month out of Delano Vanhoef's deaths. So they had to do something about that. They had to react accordingly. But I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Yes. I mean, Spa, whatever. Another predictable finish, another predictable, almost predictable situation from the FIA. I mean, I understand the need or the desire to change things up when it comes to or not change things up, but delay things because of weather and the rain and this and that, and that's fine. But we talk about these wet tires now the discussion or not even the discussion, what actually happened in the sprint was that they run, everyone goes on wet tires for them to run behind a safety car for four laps just to then everybody or some switch to inters because they kind of went over the track. And it's like, what's the point of the wets then? What's the point of the wet tires? Why not let everybody come in and switch to inters so you have an actual sprint that has that, competition? I don't know. Just feels like there's always something. There's always some reason. There's always some... what is the FIA going to do this week to, affect the outcome or affect some part of what's happening. I understand, again, I understand the desire for safety. I want the sport to be as safe as possible. I just don't like this indecision. You know, it's like, just do it. Just stick to it. Or have these types of policies kind of, written down, here, this is what's going to happen if X happens. So it's not like, well, what's going to happen this week, right? It seems like it's always that kind of situation where we're like, well, what's going to happen now? What are they going to do in an event of this? Like, why doesn't everybody kind of just know it already? I get kind of, pissed off.
I think this is why fans can't agree on what's actually a penalty, what isn't a penalty, and the reasons why. You notice every single time something happens that results in a penalty, I always go to the comments because I feel like you always get a good gauge of like how the F1 community feels about certain things as they happen through the comments. And so there's so much either confusion with the rules or people yelling at each other because their interpretation of the rules is different, or they talk about penalties that weren't called by this driver or that driver at this race, but they were called against this driver at that race. And that there's always different interpretations of the rules based off what happens. And that is directly the FIA's fault because they've never been consistent. Fans don't have to be consistent. And it creates, we talk about how can F1, how can the FIA kind of quell the hostilities in the F1 fan world now, especially as it stands. You've got new, you've got old, you've got DTS, pre-DTS. You have so many different types of fans now that all of these fans have these different personalities that are kind of contentious towards the other. So how do you quell that? You give us some transparency. You tell us this is exactly how this is going to be, and this is exactly how we're going to call this, and this is exactly why. And we're going to be consistent about this. There's no consistency. And so I think it creates more toxicity among fans than it needs to.
Yeah. It's definitely an issue, and it's going to continue to be an issue until we get clarity. I'm not necessarily sure it is something. It almost seems like either they're not worried about it or they just genuinely don't care. And I hate to say that because I'm sure they do care to an extent, right? You don't want to lose your fan base. But I'm not sure it's like the worry is let's talk across different demographics at this point. It's kind of like we're going to do what we set out to do. And if that continues to help bring in new fans, then that's all that matters, right? Like we don't care about, we're not worrying about every fan base at once. We've just got to focus on the one that we've kind of put all our eggs, the basket we've put our eggs in. So I don't know. Like I said, that's what it seems like to me, but
But again, we talk about how do you keep those fans? And I'm not sure that they're going to be able to keep fans if there's no consistency, because they're going to look at the FIA and they're going to think, is this political? Like what's going on here? Nothing is ever consistent. So I see more fans hemorrhaging than staying because of that.
Yeah. And I think that's also an interesting perspective because there is, you have more and more fans showing up to races. So races are becoming more attended. It seems like we're breaking a record every week. There's a new record broken. But the TV audiences, at least in the US, seem to be dropping.
Yeah.
So I wonder, and we've talked about this on previous episodes, I wonder if that is by design, not just coincidence. They knew they had to up the interest in the sport. And then the next frontier, which we talked about, was getting people to actually show up to races, because you can only keep them interested so long in a race on television or from home. There's only so much you can do, at least right now, right? How do you get those people to give a crap about your series, your sport? And it's a, to me, it is all, I mean, again, my opinion is that it is all about getting, getting them to an event, checking out the spectacle, you know, building out these awesome events. You know, these aren't just events either, right? Like these are full, like these are festivals. That's what they're turning. That's what they're kind of turning these things into. I mean, they're festivals. That is what I'm seeing, or I liken this to. Is hey, let's focus. Let's build out a festival now, and we build out that festival, and people will come. They'll spend more money overall. You know, a TV audience, does a TV audience spend that much money? I don't know. I mean, they've clearly looked at the numbers. Maybe the TV audience doesn't spend as much. So now, or because of the fall off, maybe they have to make these things a lot more interesting in person for folks to come out and you know, I need to check out this F1 weekend. Also, we all know, anyone that's ever been to an F1 race knows that it is way more interesting if you go there, right?
Yeah.
You're feeling the vibe of the crowd. You're hearing the cars, whether or not we agree on if the cars sound good or not. It's a whole different story. But, you know, all of that is just builds the anticipation. It's very, very different when you're on television, right? Like, I don't hear the cars. I can't hear them that well. I'm not really, you know, you don't hear the crowd. It's the hype is not there. Yeah. So I still think that their best bet is to really build up the in-person events, build up how those are, you know, how exciting those are or can be, and then that's how they continue, you know, going forward. I don't know that the answer is necessarily like worrying about a TV audience right now. The only way they can make that stuff exciting is if they start to dock Red Bull, which I know they don't want to do, and I don't think they should either, as boring as it is for me, as much as I hate it as a Ferrari fan, or you don't like it as a Mercedes fan, or somebody else is not doesn't like it as a McLaren fan, you can't go and just, you know, penalize Red Bull, unless they broke a rule, right? But yeah, if they didn't, and they're not doing anything illegal, then you've got to just let it play out. And obviously they're better than everybody else, and that's okay. But, you know, maybe it's not really okay when you're looking at it from a business standpoint, right? Yeah. So how do you change that up? And they'll have to look at that. But I truly do hope they don't go and like, oh, let's just slow Red Bull down. It's like, okay, well, that's great. Because then if it's, you know, what if it's, you know, what if Ferrari gets dominant? What if McLaren gets dominant at some point? What if, you know, Mercedes gets back to dominance? Then what are they going to do? They're going to, you know, and listen, it's happened in the past. So I'm also aware of that as well. But I think that's just against sporting in general. And that's what I don't want to see. I would rather this get settled by just everybody being able to have, you know, be better, right? And if that's because, you know, for money, if that's for, if it's money they need, fine. Then let's get more money into the sport so these people can develop better cars. If it's sponsorship, well, that's coming. That'll happen soon enough, right? Like all of this stuff should be happening. It might take some time, but I would love to see you know, more competition across the board.
Yeah, I think we all would. Well, it's interesting you say that, because we've talked in the past about how concerned people were with Formula One's ability to actually scale because of the price of the event, that ticket prices were going up, that it was just becoming a completely unaffordable experience for most people. And now we're finding out this year, despite all of that, that there's record attendance at these races, that people are actually willing to stick around for hours in the rain, risking potential delays, risking potentially having to show up at a race at a time where you weren't expecting to see the race because they had to move it because of weather. People are sticking around. And so I think what we can say is that those concerns are no longer concerns, right? And that F1's focus, like you said, is on getting people to the actual races. They make much more money that way. They don't make a lot of money when you're watching a race from your TV, if any. And so getting you to buy a ticket, getting you to pay for the shuttles, getting you to pay for parking, getting you to actually go into the venue and buy merchandise, and all these things support the local economy. They support Formula One. They support communities. And that is the most important thing for Formula One right now, is getting people to the races. And when you have 24 race calendar, when you have now three races in the US, a race in Mexico, there are so many, and Canada, there are so many opportunities right now for even Americans to go to a race that we never had before. So I'm not concerned anymore about the growth of Formula One. What I am concerned about is the growth of the sport itself. Where is the sport going? We talk all the time about how regulations changes and rules changes and rules inconsistencies and the FIA's inconsistent, all these things that add up to a pretty shitty overall race. You might have a fantastic experience if you're actually at the race, but the race itself is not good. And unless there's a major collision, a major event that happens, I mean, really, it's a very black and white race, which wouldn't necessarily, in theory, isn't a bad thing, but not at those prices. You have to have a better on-track product for the price that you're now charging. And you can put as much money into development of these cars, into redoing these tracks as you want to. I mean, they could expand Spa if they wanted to, but is it necessarily going to make better racing? And that is, I think, the biggest concern that Formula One has right now. Are we going to lose fans because people don't like the racing? People don't like this dominant mentality that we think, oh, well, not allowing Mercedes to spend $500 million is what's going to help other teams compete. And to some teams' credit, they have been able to improve. Even Williams, I'm impressed with what Williams has been able to do. But then you've got Haas, you've got Alpine, you've got Alfa Romeo. You've got a couple teams that are down at the bottom still. And it's really frustrating to watch as a Formula One fan, because as of right now, you see an inconsistent Mercedes, you see an inconsistent Ferrari, you see a McLaren that's improving, but still lacks consistency. And again, that wasn't Oscar Piastri's, well, wasn't totally Oscar Piastri's fault what happened at Spa, but that was a really significant missed opportunity, because I felt like that would have been the one race where, especially in wet conditions, there would have been a direct one-on-one competition. We would have been able to accurately assess if Red Bull wasn't able to use DRS. We would have had a true accurate assessment on which car is actually faster, which car is actually improved the most. And obviously that was kind of neutralized. The rain didn't really happen the way they were expecting it to happen on Sunday. Piastri was out. Lando just kept dropping for some reason. And that was, you know, a lot of things happened. But again, those are the things that fans kind of hold on to. And when those don't even come to fruition during race weeks, it's like, what is happening? I'm bored. And I don't know how F1 deals with that. But I mean, like you said, you can't penalize Red Bull just to try to equalize competition. But it's like, are these new regulations going to change anything? And I'm not sure that they will.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you can, right? Like you said, you can penalize them. I don't know if that's a good look, especially for newer fans that already don't understand it, or like, you know, would be like, well, what the hell? What, now you're just gonna penalize the top team? You know, that man, that's just kind of sucks, not gonna lie. That kind of sucks. If you look, it's kind of a no-win situation too, right? You don't necessarily, get as a fan, you don't get to see like the magic of the sport, or you know, the series, but you kind of are at the same time. Like, it is pretty impressive to see what Red Bull's doing. Mm-hmm. But I think that all gets lost in translation, because for the fans that are showing up for the drama or the fans that are showing up for the, you know, for competition, which I think we all are, but like for real competition or that doesn't understand the competition, you're really like, it's a very tricky line you're balancing on.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. We've got an entire month now to, I guess, figure that out or at least talk about that, and we'll see if anything changes, but I don't see it happening.
Well, with that said though, what are your thoughts on SPA and the FIA and safety concerns? Because that seems to be a big one that people are talking about right now.
Yeah, again, I'm you know, what are the safety concerns? Is it the track? Is it the weather? Is it the, like, what exactly is it that we are concerned with, right? And so I think if the track itself, it's that, you know, there's something within the track that you need to figure out or you need to focus on, then that's one thing. If it's just the weather and we're worried about that, then I think, listen, some of the best races in the history of this sport are have come in the rain. And, you know, we talk about the greats and we talk about some of their epic performances, Senna, Schumacher, some impressive performances in the rain. But we're also talking at a time where safety wasn't as, you know, what it is now. You know, there's, we're a lot more safe of a sport, you know, than we were at, obviously Ayrton Senna passed away on the track. So that's, geez. But I don't know. I don't know that we need to necessarily change how they react to it. We're talking about vehicles. I don't know if you listened to this stat, but they were saying on full wets at, you know, all out speed, those tires can actually displace a bathtub full of water per second.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That is absolutely insane.
That's wild.
So is it that these drivers, like, I don't think, although the drivers did, you know, did say stuff about the safety. So that's, you know, that's part of that. But man, you look at how the technology that allows them to actually race is available, and you're like, wow, that's wild. So I think we're looking at a track, you know, tracks. These tracks are not necessarily built for these cars are faster, but they're also bigger and heavier, right? Yeah. So they're not as, they don't move as much. And again, this is something that I think I've talked about so many times now. But you look at that and you're like, okay, well, it comes down to the cars again, right? Just like we've talked about, it comes down to do we have the right cars on track for, or do we have the right cars racing on these tracks that were built 100 years ago?
Yeah.
You know, these tracks have been built for a completely different generation of vehicle. Does it work that way? I mean, coming up over the Eau Rouge Radeon, you know, sequence there, I mean, you're like, those cars could take off at any moment, it almost feels like, right? It looks, at least from our perspective, it looks like the car could take off when it comes up over that corner. You're just like, holy crap. I mean, granted, downforce and whatnot helps keep those cars stuck to the ground, but any breakup in that downforce, and we have seen what happens. So I think that's what you're looking at for, you know, from a safety perspective, is like the focus needs to be getting them talking about either the cars or the tracks themselves that need to be kind of built for the generation we're racing in. That's all. That's where I'll leave that.
Well, two quotes have, you know, really stuck out. Fernando Alonso said on the newest regulations that they've actually made visibility worse. He said, in quotes, In Budapest, FP1 visibility was borderline. It's not a track specific thing. That's not a spa. That's not spa visibility is lower. Just the nature of the cars now with the ground effect and big tires, the spray is bigger than the past. And then there's what George Russell said to actually describe what the spray felt like as a driver. He said, the way I describe it is to try and give some perspective, or to try and give some perspective is driving down a motorway and pouring rain and turning off your windscreen wipers. That's genuinely how it feels in the cockpit.
Wow.
So they tried some experimentation a few weeks ago on how to sort of deflect that spray. That wasn't as successful as they hoped it would be. So that's going to require a significant amount of R&D to be able to figure out, you know, you might be able to disperse a bathtub full of water or worth of water with those wets. But when it doesn't matter, you're still going to have massive spray. And if the visibility is as low as George Russell is actually describing it, that's where the massive safety concern needs to come into play. And that's not an irrational safety concern. And maybe Max is kind of more nonchalant about this because Max doesn't really ever have to worry about it. The only spray Max has to worry about is from the safety car. Let's be real. So that's the only spray he's dealing with. He, you know, his comments on it, he's kind of been like, it's not that big of a deal. That's not really the comments or the opinions that we need to factor in. It's the drivers that are actually, you know, from Max down. And so that's 19 cars. You have to listen to what they have to say. And I think that if they can figure out the spray concern, I don't think these tracks are going to be as problematic as they've been. And, you know, interesting perspective. I saw a chart that was the list of driver deaths in motorsport, like in total. Indianapolis was at 57. Nürburgring is 48. Monza is 30. Le Mans is 27. And Spa is 26. So it's not like Spa is the outlier here. They have major deaths, dozens of deaths have occurred in other tracks. And I understand that every single time there's a new car iteration, it is based off of feedback from previous years. What can we do to make this car safer? And I think we've seen it in the last couple of years with Lewis, with Fernando, with Charles, with so many different drivers who probably would have been dead hadn't been for the halo. And nobody liked it when it first came out. And so I'm curious, especially after, you know, 2019 with Antoine Hubert and then now with Delano, I'm curious to see what they do to deal with that. And I think that is the biggest regulations change that we need to pay attention to, especially given what Fernando Alonso said. I mean, he basically said that the focus on, you know, making the cars bigger, the those factors, are they making the cars less safe?
They're faster, they're bigger, they're not as easy to handle. So yeah, I would say that's probably an accurate statement. Let's move along. We know there's issues here. We're gonna have plenty of time to talk about that. Something that I think is really interesting. You and I talked about this a few episodes back about F1 Academy, and you know, F1 Academy wasn't getting its due. They were not getting the opportunity to be seen. We haven't seen F1 Academy anywhere, right? There's no broadcasting of it. But F1 Academy is now getting a boost from all 10 teams in the form of every F1 team will have to sponsor a driver on a team, because we remember F1 Academy has three drivers per team. So one of those drivers will be a direct sponsor driver from a Formula One team. And the teams will have to also have their livery on one of the F1 Academy cars, which is cool. You know, each. So all 10 teams are represented, and drivers are represented, or being represented by the big boys, so to speak. I think this is great. This finally is, you know, we were talking about when is F1 going to kind of put their money where their mouth is. They keep talking about, this being important. This is you know, this is something that they are really putting their efforts into, and yet they weren't prepared to even show it, to broadcast it, right? And there was no other, like, not even on F1 TV. So all of that led to a lot of outrage, a lot of us being, you know, fans of the sport, talking and chirping online. And I'm fully convinced that the feedback and the response that came from no one being able to watch this from the first race, you know, kind of pushed F1 into, hey, make a decision. And so now we'll be able to even watch it. It's going to be broadcast. I believe it's going to be broadcast on F1. I don't think they've specified it, but it's very likely that it will be on F1 TV, even though I know that's not the official line yet. It's most likely we're going to see it on F1 TV. No, you know, no word on Sky Sports/ESPN, but that's huge. That's a big step. Your thoughts?
Yeah. Like you said, 10 drivers, they're going to be nominated by F1 teams, and the drivers who aren't being supported by a team, they'll be supplemented by other partners. So yeah, like you said, they're vague, but from what I'm hearing is that round 7 of F1 Academy will take place the weekend of the US Grand Prix in Austin. So the fact that US Grand Prix fans are going to be able to see F1 Academy, that's going to be a huge boost for them, because again, we talk about the cost of races, and they want to give fans an experience, which is why you have the supporting races, the Porsche series, the other ones, and then now we're going to have F1 Academy, because apparently they're aligning its schedule with the F1 calendar in 2024. So fans are going to have significant exposure to F1 Academy. So I'm hoping that they have merch tables. I'm hoping that they do fan interactions the way they do with F1 drivers. Obviously, they won't be as big, but I'm hoping that it really starts to draw bigger crowds of girls, maybe engineers, drivers, etc., who want to understand more about what the F1 Academy is. And I'm hoping that maybe F1 Academy considers reaching out to STEM groups in these different race cities and inviting these girls out to the track and to kind of see what they're doing and get people excited about racing. There's a lot of opportunity there for F1, for the F1 Academy. And I think that what Susie Wolf has been doing is she has so much experience in the world of racing. She has, her husband, a billionaire, Harvard Business School fellow.
Oh, yeah.
Incredibly successful, incredibly important to motorsports. And so I imagine she has probably asked Toto for some help in getting these initiatives pushed towards the top of F1's to-do list. And that is a good thing, because I think for the longest time, any arm of women's racing, they haven't had the advocacy that they've needed to be successful. And right now with Susie Wolf, this is the biggest of the big time advocate that women's racing has ever had. And I love that they're taking advantage of that.
Yeah. No, I love it. I love the kind of powerhouse that the two of them have created, mm-hmm. you know, for themselves, Susie and Toto. And, you know, they're putting their efforts, you know, where they have to. I think it's important for what they're doing. They're doing important work, and there's no two folks that I would think are better suited for that and taking this into the next, taking it into the future than Susie and Toto, or, you know, Susie specifically, but the two of them, and, you know, Toto being an advocate or an ally for that is fantastic. This is good news. This is very good news. This is excellent. So now we have to see if, you know, how much F1, you know, actually sticks to it and actually makes good on what we're seeing. You know, of course, you've now said it's going to be broadcast. You've now said that all 10 teams are going to have to, you know, do this. It's going to be very hard to, you know, start changing timelines. I think we'll see stuff happen very soon.
Yeah.
And I'm excited. Speaking of future, 2026 is coming, and there's a lot of talk of 2026. There's a lot of talk of, you know, engine regulations. There's a lot of talk of engine equalization, which is the big talk from over this weekend. And so for 2026, the rule that's been reported is that the FIA will be able to grant additional development to the teams who have over 3% less power than the most powerful engine. Now, I don't know the exact specifics on those numbers now, so I'm not sure like which teams would fall out of that. Obviously, there's more engine manufacturers coming in, so it's very possible that, you know, we see more of that or more of this like falling out of the 3% type situation going forward. You know, right now you've got your main engine manufacturers, Ferrari, Mercedes, Red Bull, and Renault, but we're going to have other engine manufacturers. Honda will be back. We've got Audi. And so now if one of these is with, you know, outside of that range, that 3% range, they're actually going to be able to get more, you know, more time to develop their car. Do you like it? Do you hate it? Thoughts? Because I've seen a lot of mixed bag on the internet.
Yeah.
From, you know, the Twitterati or Xerati from this.
Yeah. Well, the report comes from, I think it's formula.uno, Formula1A. Anyway, it said for the new power unit cycle, it was in fact decided that in the first five races of each season in the period of 26 through 30, the FIA will monitor the performance of each internal combustion engine and an average power will be calculated for each ICE. Any engine builder who has more than 3% less power than the most powerful engines will be granted additional development, such as extending the use of their test benches and opening some areas for development. Again, my concern is how does this affect the cap?
Sure.
Do they get a spending bonus also? Just like, hey, you didn't use the cap appropriately the first time. Your car sucks. So yeah, we're going to give you more time to focus on and develop your engine, but also we're going to give you some more money, but also we're not going to give you a grid penalty when you replace your engine or you replace any other parts that are important. Yeah. How is that going to, you know, there's
that's a great question,
lot of
sure.
layers to this. So
yeah.
Funding, big one, and then penalties. How are you going to accurately assess if your engine is actually doing better if you're getting five place grid penalties or potentially getting moved down to the back of the pack?
Sure.
So you're never going to get an accurate assessment unless you say, okay, well, any of these teams that fall within that 3% margin who are allowed to work, you know, work on these parts, they're exempt from grid penalties. Like, that's not fair.
Yeah.
So I don't know that this is necessarily the best route unless, like I said, but here's the other thing too. If you're a team and say testing in the first couple races of the season, you realize, wow, we effed up big time. Mm-hmm. We effed up really bad. Okay. So let's just start to be slow on purpose, so that we can have this extra money. We can have this extra time in the lab, essentially. How many teams do you think are going to start lying about that just to get a part of that? If they're not competing for like, you know, one through three in the constructors by the, you know, quarter mark of the season.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. I don't know how that all, you know, I'm not sure how the specifics of that pan out or work, but it is definitely, you know, there could definitely be some trickery that'll happen or hey, let's just dial our engines down. I think.
Or, hey, we know we suck this year. We know we're not going to compete for the constructors. We know our drivers aren't going to compete for the drivers. So let's just screw it. Let's just, you know, tank to the bottom, and then work on get a jump start on the engines for next year.
Sure.
It's like, it's like what the NFL does, where you always say, who are we tanking for? Or even the NBA, who are we tanking for? And you always wonder, you're like, I know my team is better than how they're playing. Who are we tanking for? Who is going number one this year overall? Or who are they going to trade out for? So it gives you a significant amount of leverage for the following season, especially in free agency in the major sports. So you have to believe that there's going to be some level of trickery involved in F1 too.
And I mean, it's going to happen because that's kind of a the nature of the beast, right? That's the nature of the sport, is how can we toe the line? How can we push? How can we, you know, do these things as close to the rule as possible? I don't know. A lot of questions to be answered, right? It's easy to throw something out there and say, you know, hey, this is what we're going to do, but you know, how do you actually enforce that? How do you keep it going forward? That is what's going to, you know, where I think we, you know, need to wait and get answers, and then we can, you know, speculate a little bit further on that.
Well,
also, we can speculate all we want. When 2026 comes around and Red Bull's still dominating, or, you know, Audi comes out of nowhere and they're good, you know, whatever might happen, we're going to have a whole different set of questions, right? Right. So it's,
But I think that reacting in this way because fans are bored, I think that's what it is. Like, are you really going to do something that is so potentially massive, with such massive implications, because fans are bored, or, you know, without the concern of how honest are these teams going to be? Like,
it's a good, we that's cannot definitely a good,
react every regulation to fan boredom. If we did that, I mean, I don't know, there would be, they'd stop races mid race for beer pong.
But isn't that kind of where the sport is going though, or the series is going at this point? Like, don't we, aren't we, not that I'm justifying it. I'm saying that, like, aren't we, we're kind of seeing that. There seems to be reactions to different, you know, things just because, well, it's not as exciting as it used to be, so let's try this. Like, that's almost what we're getting as a reaction to inequalities in the sport, inequalities in performance is what I'm referring to.
Yeah.
So I don't, you know, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is there. I don't know how they fix that. But you have to think that you can only do that so much before it backfires, right? Or it doesn't do what you expect it to do.
Yeah.
I don't know where that line is. I don't know, you know, what the, I'm not sure what that looks like. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Lots of challenges ahead for Formula One for sure. Mm-hmm. I guess really all we can do as fans is wait and see and hope that, that they have people that are asking the same questions that we're asking. But again, because it's the FIA, they never plan for anything. They just kind of do things on a whim, and then they change things thereafter. So this is one of those things you can't just institute, put out there in the regulations, and then have to backtrack because they're like, oh shit, we messed up.
Yeah.
Teams are now taking advantage of this. How do we deal with this? And then, like, you have the backlash from fans, you have the backlash from teams. This isn't fair, blah, blah, blah. It's like they're opening up a huge can of worms for themselves right now. And
I agree.
I'm just really at the point where I'm tired of the FIA doing everything that is actually necessary to build the sport and to actually create some cohesion. Mm. And the implementation of the cap was intended to solve a lot of these problems. It's only made them worse. So I don't know. I truly don't know where we go from here, but I don't think that this is the move.
Well, we will we'll see how that pans out in a few years, I guess. That's definitely it's definitely gonna be a point of contention. I think we're gonna hear a lot about it for the next, you know, really the next 4 years between speculation. And then once things actually get implemented, I think we'll have a lot more, you know, answers.
Yeah.
Based on, you know, the teams. I mean, right now we're in the middle of the season. Maybe we'll hear more about it during this break. And with the break, you know, comes a lot more time for people to make comments on things. So we'll see what happens. I mean, hell, who knows? There might be more of a silly season for us than we know.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's all we got for you today, folks. We were planning on releasing this last week. It didn't happen, but we're going to get it out for you. And we are, I know I'm ready for an F1, a big break, a month long break. I'm as much as I enjoy watching the races, I'm also ready for a little bit of a pause, but we will keep you informed on all things that are happening during the break as much as we can. And as much as, actually does happen, we'll keep you informed of all things there. Any final thoughts, V?
No, I think we covered it all. Indeed, I think we could all use a break.
Well, on that note, we will talk to you on the next episode. And yeah, I'm Vincenzo.
I'm VF. You can find us on Twitter at the VF Castro and at Vincenzo Landino. Talk to you guys later.
Ciao.
Thank you so much for tuning into the VF1 show. If you liked it, please don't forget to hit the subscribe button. And for previews of next week's show, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at the VF Castro and Vincenzo Landino.